Blog Talk Radio.
Special guests, and our guest is Derek Caffey. Are you there, Derek?
Yep, Derek Caffey.
Caffey, I'm sorry, Derek Caffey.
No problem.
Good to have you. How is your day going so far?
It is very busy with the events of today. You know, everybody's trying to pivot and get into a better position, so that includes myself.
Yeah. So how do you look at real estate investment? Well, before let me share a little bit about who we're talking to, so we can, you know, have an idea of the person behind the mic, so to speak. Derek is a U.S. Army veteran, attained his bachelor's degree from Youngstown State University with a concentration in finance. He later attended Clark Atlanta University for his MBA, but decided to postpone that to grow Code Black Properties. And Code Black Properties LLC is a real estate investment firm specializing in the development of multifamily and commercial properties. And so we're so excited to have him here to talk about real estate investing, because as I've said on the show before, there's usually only two ways you make money in America. Either you have started a business or you invest in real estate. And sometimes most of the folks who make it usually you're doing both. What do you think about that, Derek? Is that pretty much the case here in America? You have to either have a business or invest in. Now, you can invest in stocks and things like that and come up with an idea, but you know, basically you have to have a business. That's what America's built on, business.
Yeah.
and real estate.
Business, whether that business is the military complex or otherwise, it's always it always winds up being about business and the acquisition of resources.
So share with us what was so exciting about real estate that made you postpone your MBA studies at Clark Atlanta University.
Well, I am a licensed real estate agent, so at the time, this was, I think, 2018 or 2017. So basically was advertising and getting so many sales that it just made financial sense to postpone the MBA, because the only reason I actually decided to pursue my MBA was because as a military veteran, I had benefits from the GI Bill, and they expire after a certain amount of time. So basically, I was under the lose it, use it or lose it timeline. And so I went into, I pursued my MBA because I was like, okay, well, let me do that. But I had also around the same time got my license as a real estate agent. And basically, once I got into the program and I start seeing the how, well, basically the money that could be earned from that side of things, it just made more sense to pursue this rather than pursuing the MBA track, which was more geared towards me working for someone else. And that wasn't something that interested me.
Did you have any prior experience in terms of owning a business, or you just kind of jumped out and said, you know, with your real estate license, let me not only sell real estate, but also invest in it?
Well, yes. In 2007, I had just graduated, December 2007, I had just graduated college, and I was getting ready to get a job as a financial analyst. And prior to doing that, as I was going through and I was being interviewed by the gentleman who owned the financial services firm, and he's telling me, yeah, you're going to have to work hard and, you know, you're going to have to build up your clientele. And the thing was, there's a part of me that that's very independent. And so my thoughts were, if I'm going to build my if I'm going to have to build up a clientele, why not build it up for my own business? So back in January 2008, I had started a restaurant delivery service called You Gotta Eat. And so this was one of my first more legit businesses, I'll say. And by legit meaning it actually made money, because I started businesses previously.
Okay.
Ever since I got out of the military. But this was the first one that actually made a little bit of money. And this was back before DoorDash and Uber Eats and all of these other major players got into the market. But before that, there was an industry called the restaurant delivery service industry, and it was just people who would start delivery services specializing in doing what Uber Eats and DoorDash and Grubhub and all others do today, which is deliver food from different restaurants to people at their final destination.
And who would have thought now, fast forward, that Uber Eats and some of these other places are the go-to businesses right now during this pandemic?
Yeah.
I imagine the folks are doing very, very well. You know, everybody's coming up with a new model to do business, whereas before your employer may have told you, you know, you can't work from home, but guess what? Not yes, you can. And so there's a lot of things changing right now. So you, so what was your first, real estate investment? What was the first thing that you did that kind of just got you started?
So in 2015, I had bought my first duplex, and it was, so it was my first home and my first investment in one. During that time, I was, because I was a military veteran, I was able to tap into the VA home loan, and that allows you to purchase a home up to four units. So you can buy a single-family home or duplex, triplex, or quadplex. And so I had aimed for a quadplex, but the what's called single-family, multifamily properties are very few and far in between. So you basically have to go to wherever that property is. So eventually, just to get on base, I got me a duplex in Cobb County. Hello, can you still hear me?
Yeah. I missed that. I blanked out there for a second. All right, go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so no, that was, I don't know where I dropped off at, but basically the first property was the duplex in Cobb County where I lived in one side, and then I rented out the other side.
Wow, okay. And so now that's a new, so as a veteran, you can buy investment property, or you just bought the property as a duplex and just decided to, you know, kind of rent out the other side and live in the other side. So was this program earmarked for investors or just for primary
residents? No, this is anybody, yes. Anybody who's a veteran, anything from 1 to 4 units is considered residential. So VA allows you to buy residential properties. So that doesn't matter whether it's a one-family home or a four-family home. As long as it's within that category, you can purchase it. And so now the only difference is different lenders, like the VA has its standard, which allows you to buy anywhere between a one- and a four-family home. But different lenders will have their own guidelines. For example, Navy Federal, if you would go to them for a VA loan, they would only allow you to buy up to a duplex with the VA home loan, but that's not based on the VA guidelines. That's based on that particular bank or credit union's guidelines.
Okay. So in your portfolio, so you have a duplex. Any other properties? I see that you also do commercial properties. So is most of your stuff mostly single-family resident homes, or do you have some commercial properties in your portfolio as well?
Yeah, so most of the properties that I have are single-family, multifamily, meaning duplexes, triplexes, the last property that I bought was 2 single-family homes on one lot. So everything that I have is residential, but some of the properties that I bought have the ability to be converted to commercial if I want to do so later on.
Now, the assumption, because in Atlanta is an extremely competitive market when it comes to real estate, does your cash have to be long to be able to buy these duplexes? What price range are we looking at in terms of properties now?
It's been changing. As we all know, Atlanta is becoming a more unaffordable area for many people. But back in the day, I know people who bought homes that are now worth $250,000. They bought it for $10,000. But this was related to the 2008 recession that, you know, I think, what did we take, around 3-5 years to recover? So, yeah, people bought homes back then that were just, they basically kind of robbed the bank almost, but yeah, made out quite well. But as far as home prices nowadays, it's kind of, we're kind of at a crossroads, which brings us to where we're at today with regard to the pandemic, because home values have been going up steadily, but we don't know how the pandemic of today will affect prices going forward.
Do you anticipate, you know, based on what you're seeing out there being active, that the renters are getting a little more skittish in terms of, is there a vibrant market right now for renters? Are people out there actively seeking homes since their employment might be tenable, that they may not be employed in 2 or 3 or 4 months?
Well, whether a person is going to be employed or not, they still need a place to stay.
Right.
Whether someone's scared about their employment, you know, we all, shelter is one of those basic needs we learned about in elementary school. So people are, I had 4 units available for rent, and I had a response for all of them. If one of them wasn't currently occupied, all 4 of them would be gone, and this was in a period of maybe 2 to 3 weeks. So there is definitely demand out there, especially because Atlanta, and it's not due to the fact that it's real estate, but it's also the fact that the Atlanta region is a very strong region. as far as growth wise, population growth wise, we're talking job growth wise, just quality of living, even affordability compared to some other major metros, Atlanta is still a very attractive place. So people are still trying to move here, and people, you know, their jobs here. So as long as there's job growth, the economy's going good, you know, outside of the pandemic, there will be a good demand for this area.
And that's one of the things that is exciting about Atlanta. And because of what you just said, the employment market is pretty robust, and of course what's going on now kind of goes against that, but that's all happening all across the country. Is there a certain type of property that you're looking at? In other words, how much cash you're going to have to put into it? What's a typical amount of cash you normally have to put in a property, whether it's single family or multifamily? What's the typical amount of, because people are always thinking, I need a lot of money to get into real estate.
Is that your
case?
No. So I'll say this. For the first property, I have always recommended anybody who's looking for investing, I've always recommended a multifamily property, meaning a duplex, triplex, or quadplex, because with the FHA loan or conventional, you can buy those types of properties with those loans, and it's still considered single family.
Got it. Okay.
With those particular types of loans, you're going to, with the FHA, you're going to have a 3.5% down payment. So for a home that would be, just to make keep the numbers simple, for a home that's $100,000, you'd have to bring $3,500 to the table. And that does not include the fact that there are down payment assistance programs available for first-time home buyers. So if a home was $200,000, that means with the FHA loan, you'd have to bring $7,000 to the table for the down payment. Now, there are other costs associated as far as what's called closing costs, but they could wind up being another 2 to 3% of the loan. It varies depending on bank, type of loan, et cetera, but 2 to 3% roughly. So maybe on a $200,000 house, you maybe bring we'd probably say 7-ish to 10, somewhere in between that ballpark, and that's before you factor in any sort of down payment assistance that may be available, which is dependent upon which city you're buying in, which county you're buying in, et cetera, your particular a borrower profile, all of those things count into what's available to you for first-time home buyer down payment assistance.
Now, do you recommend somebody do this on a part-time basis and before going full-time into real estate investing?
Yeah, well, originally when I bought my duplex, I was a mailman in Kennesaw. So I was working for the United States Postal Service, and either way, you need a place to stay. So it just made sense. I was like, I have to live somewhere. So when I bought my first property, I went from paying, I think, around 800-ish, maybe 815 in rent a month, to paying maybe like $2. And that was the difference between my mortgage and what the tenant paid. And then as time went on and rates went up, I was also keeping up with rent. So as rents went up, I also raised rents. And so I got to the point where I was cash flow positive each month off of a property that was building equity for me and providing some cash flow.
So are you?
So it is very part-time.
Are you a full-time investor now?
Yes. So I transitioned in this March 2016.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's when I went full-time into real estate investing and just being an agent, being a landlord. And also I was injured in Iraq, so I'm also medically retired from the military, so that provides me a pension and medical benefit. So that was also something that allowed me to get out of the
the rat race a little bit earlier.
So you had some other income coming in. So in what's your end game in all this? I mean, looking down the road, you're about 4 or 5 years into full-time investing. You know, at what point would you say, okay, I'm done, you know, I'm not buying any more properties? First of all, how many properties do you have now? How many units do you have now?
Seven.
So at what point, and you're full-time investing, so at what point, well, what's your end game, I guess? Where do you say, okay, I have enough properties? At what point do you say that?
I don't think there's ever a point when I say that. It becomes, at a certain point, it's not about money anymore. But for me, I actually love doing this. I enjoy taking properties, fixing them up, basically creating the world that other people live in. And that's what real estate does. When you build a building or you renovate a building, you create the world that other people live in. You tailor their experience that they have in the world. And to me, that is something that is quite a magical experience. So the only thing for me, it's not a goal of, I do have a financial goal, but I don't have a stop point outside of death itself. I plan on doing, going larger and larger with projects.
Okay, so your plan is to continue, is not so much a money goal, but that you're going to continue on doing it as long as you like doing it. I guess that's what it sounds like. That you're having fun, you're creating value, and so there's no point where I'm saying, okay, I'm going to have 20 properties, cash flowing, 100 grand, and I'm like, you know, going to go do something else or whatever.
Yeah, well, no, it's to me, it's I just really enjoy real estate, and I have a certain number that I'm looking for of properties. I mean, really, it's the number as far as cash flow. And once I reach that, that just means that at that point I'm not concerned about money anymore. But I'll still do what I do just because it's like, it's the same as, you know, LeBron or Jordan or anybody who wants to be great at anything. You just want to be better at what you enjoy. You enjoy playing a game, you just want to be the best at it. And so for me, it's not about, it's a way to provide for yourself financially, but it's also a way for me to affect the world.
Okay.
So,
and when you look at, it sounds like also that you're buying properties that are vacant. Are you buying properties that need a lot of rehab, or you're buying properties that just need some cosmetic stuff? You know, a full rehab, gutting it out, or you're buying properties that are pretty much close to rent ready. You just need some paint and carpet and that kind of thing. So what type of properties are you looking at when you're looking at a particular, you know, deal?
Yeah, so originally, like if you're going VA, FHA, you need a property that is rent ready because those type of loans will not allow you to buy the fixer-upper. There are specific loans for fixer-uppers, but for the most part, I'll say this based on clients who I've had who've done their first flip. Whatever you think it's going to cost, it's going to cost more. However long you think it's going to take way longer. And so, because banks know this, they are very adverse to giving out money to fixer-upper people. So most of the time, your first property is going to be more of a rent-ready. Now, what I look for is it really depends. If I'm looking for a rental property, I'm looking for something that's junked up to a certain extent. What I'm looking for really depends on the particular property and the numbers. But I'm looking for properties that I can do a value add, meaning I can fix up things and just maybe modernize the property to be able to increase the rent and increase the equity in the property. If I'm doing a flip, it will be, for the most part, the same thing, but it's just all about the numbers of that particular property in the area that it's in.
So, yeah, it really differs. It just depends on the particular deal itself and what my exit strategy is, whether it's a flip or whether it's a buy and hold property.
Do you see what you're seeing in the market that you're in, and the area of town, I guess, you're focusing on, if there is one? Is this more of a, right now in Atlanta, is it a buyer's market or a seller's market?
So we are in a, we're in a confused market at this particular moment in time. It was a seller's market going into the pandemic because we were dealing with low inventory. It's been historically low inventory. It's eased off compared to maybe 2018. 2019 was a much less aggressive, at least for the homes at the price range that my buyers and sellers are at, which is like $300,000 down. So I would say at this point in time, we're dealing with a couple of different things. First of all, if you've been paying attention to the news, you'll see that Chase recently changed their mortgage standards to having a 700 or above FICO score and having to put 20% down. That is basically Chase's way of saying we are out of the mortgage business, because out of in my first year I probably sold maybe like 13 homes. I don't think one of my buyers I don't think any one person had above a 700. So basically they're saying they are out of that business, because that score and even that amount of down payment, the only time you'll pay 20% on a property is typically it's your second home or it's an investment property. That's about the only time you'll ever pay 20% in most cases prior to the pandemic. So even if you're a buyer nowadays, you are dealing with restricted lending. So you could want to buy, but people who may have qualified a month ago can no longer qualify. And so if you're a seller, what's happening is, you know, if your buyer market goes down, then all of a sudden, either you're going to pull it off market because there's not going to be enough people, you're not going to get at your price, or you're going to have to lower your price. And right now, it's so confused. We don't know. We're in the middle of this thing, and it's doing damage. We're seeing, you know, 5 million people filed for unemployment this week, and then 6 million this week, and then 3.5 million that week. And these numbers are going to continue to eat away at the economy, and it hasn't stopped yet. So we don't really know where the market's going to be. And because of, you know, things like the forbearance that they've put in place, which I think is really going to eat up people later on, we just don't know where this is going to wind up, because it hasn't stopped yet. The bleeding hasn't stopped. We're still bleeding and still trying to gauge, you know, what our health is. But until we actually, you know, put that patch on and just, you know, able to stop the bleeding, no, it's anybody's guess right now. But it is not really a buyer's or seller's market. It's just confusion for the most part.
Well, it's going to be an interesting ride, and I guess, you know, I think it's going to be interesting in terms of, you know, what happens in the market. I'm seeing in the market that I'm in south of Atlanta, it's more of a buyer's market because there's so many folks panicking and putting their houses up for sale. There's a lot of inventory out there, and so in that market, it's just a little different than Atlanta. It's not as competitive, and the price points are a lot less, and the market that they're going at, I'm going after, is different than it is in Atlanta. Well, Derek, thank you so much for being on Your Personal Finance. Much success. How can people get in touch with you? You have a website or?
Yeah, so people can reach me through my website. It's code, C-O-D-E, blackproperties.com. So www.codeblackproperties.com.
Great, great. And you're also a real estate agent, so you can help folks with that process as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I primarily specialize with investors.
Investors. So you're looking for people who want to buy property as an investment versus somebody that wants to buy a house and live in.
Yes.
Okay.
Or someone who's looking for an investment that they also live in, such as, you know, what I did. I want to buy multifamily property to live in one unit and rent out the other unit, or Airbnb one unit and rent out the other unit.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Derek. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care now. And there's so many ways to skin the cat. We're going to, in real estate, there's so many ways to do this. As you can see, bringing on a plethora of individuals who have different strategies in investing. And I'll be presenting those folks to you so you can get an idea what you might want to do. And also some business folks as well. My next guest queued up. But before we do that, we're going to play a segment of my show, Your Personal Finance. And this one is about small business money moves.
You own the business, but employees and suppliers alike can help it succeed. Find out how on today's Your Personal Finance.
A classic story of boy meets girl. Two people at a diner soon discover they share an interest in something other than coffee. So what do you like best about your Dodge Neon?
Lots of stuff.
Like?
I love the 16-valve single overhead cam.
Excuse me?
Or maybe the electronic fuel injection.
How about the hype sound system?
Or the power windows.
And the power locks.
They're good. But what I really like is neon power to turn heads.
How about another cup of coffee?
No. How about a drive?
Right.
Now you can drive the head-turning neon for less than you probably expect. Get one all dressed up with lots of extras, including 15-inch wheels or an alarm system. Dodge Neon. Different. Now at a friendly Dodge dealer near you.
Small business owners enjoy the feeling of independence and self-reliance, but your employees and your suppliers can be valuable allies in making it successful. Teach employees how the health of the company affects them. If the company is not making money, nobody has job security. Get them involved. If you are too small for a profit sharing or a 401k plan, involve your employees by getting their input on relevant matters. They are the ones who best know what's happening at the cash register or on the production line. Your suppliers can help too. Ask them about early payment discounts and even small breaks on prices. Get your suppliers to deliver inventory when you need it. This saves you money on inventory costs. For Your Personal Finance, I'm Charles Ross.
And we're back on Your Personal Finance. Great day to be alive. And I hope you're getting some good information on real estate investing. Up next, this must be the military show, because up next is another retired military officer. Joining me now is Charles McCutcheon. He's an author and a retired naval officer who holds a BA in criminal justice and an MBA in human resources. He's a real estate investor, speaker, business consultant, and an equity partner, and this is interesting, in a CBD company. So we'll have to talk about that too. Good evening, Charles. How are you today?
I am fantabulous. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing so good, so good. So I don't know what's happening in your state. You're up in Virginia, but down here, our governor has decided to open up the state, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this pandemic. So we're going to be holding our breath on that one. How's things in Virginia as far as the pandemic is concerned? You guys opened up?
No, we kind of, everybody just stay home. And when they say open up, but y'all, what does that mean?
Well, they're relaxing. They're saying folks can go to the movie theater, can go to dining restaurants, go to the gyms. As long as you quote unquote, keep the social distancing guidelines, which I think is kind of hard in a restaurant or a gym. You know, I mean,
yeah.
What can you do? So I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. But I guess the people who – here's a challenge, and we'll get into real estate, is that I guess if your employer – here's where I get concerned. If your employer demands that you come back because they've opened it up, and you go back and you get sick and God forbid then you get sick and die, can you sue your employer? That's just something to think about.
This is going to be amazing.
It's going to be
amazing time.
Hey, Charles, so how did you get started in real estate investing? How did you get started?
I actually started with a VA loan back in the day. So I bought my first house with the VA loan, came to the table, maybe $500 if I can remember, too long ago, really. And then I took equity out, and I started using equity out of the house to buy other assets and rentals.
That's what our other guest did. He did the same thing. He used a VA loan and got his first property, didn't have to come with much money, and then started doing things, you know. So how long have you been investing in real estate?
Oh wow. I bought my first house in 1996.
Wow. Okay.
So but I've been in and out of it. I took about 3 or 4 years off only due to the 2008, you know. So I stopped in like 2007 and I picked it back up in 2010. The end of 2010. So, but other than that, I've been steady on it.
So when you say that you took a break from it, that means you sold all your real estate, got out of the game, and then got back in?
No, I still have my rental. I just didn't buy anymore because the only reason I didn't buy, I was going overseas. Being in the military, I was heading overseas, and I didn't figure that I could maintain getting more property. I just said I'll just keep what I have for now. So.
Okay. And so what type of properties are you investing in? What's the profile of the property that you're looking at?
The only type of deals that I want to do that I do now is the type that makes a profit.
Okay.
So I'm into single family, multifamily, motels, hotels, casinos, theme parks, land, development. So I'm doing a little bit of, you know, I have my hands in a little bit of everything on out there. I partner with folks as well, so I'm not doing everything myself.
So you just covered the whole thing. The only thing I didn't hear in there was mobile homes and RV parks. You pretty much got a smorgasbord of real estate stuff, of things that you're doing.
I haven't touched any mobile homes, but I'll
get into it if it's right. We had a guest on, I think it was past Friday, where he's doing a mobile. Matter of fact, he's a former NFL player, and he got into mobile homes. The margins on mobile homes are incredible, crazy, crazy business. But, you know, that's why I like doing this show and talking to different kinds of real estate investors, because it's just not one way to skin the cat. I mean, you're all over the place, you know. When you say making a profit, is there a particular deal? When you talk about a single family home, let's talk about that for a minute. So if you're looking at a single family home or multifamily, what is the price range you're looking at? Is there a certain price range or amount of deposit, down payment you're going to have to put into it?
I was told long ago, and you have to believe it, there's no shortage of money. So when I go into a deal, I don't really care about the price. I care about the numbers and how the numbers flow out in the cash flow of the property. So I don't care if it's $200,000 or $800,000. Does it make sense? Is it a deal? Am I going in with my goal is to go in and see how least amount of money I can spend. Let me just tell you that, you know, that's where I am.
So go ahead.
My goal is to go in and speak to the owner and figure out what's their issue or how can I help them. That's what I go with first. I don't care about the pricing. I want to know how can I help them first, because there's a lot of different ways you can get into deals where you don't have to come out of pocket.
Okay, and give us an example then of something like that, because that's what everybody likes to hear, the no money down, hey, I don't put my money into it. Give us a sample of a deal that perhaps where you didn't have to put any of your money into it.
I'll do it two different ways, but there's deals out there called, you know, there's a wholesale type of deal, there's lease options, there's subject to deals, there's wraparound mortgages, Then there's creative financing. Then there's doing the deal, getting the deal yourself, working all the numbers, and then putting it out there for investors to invest with you into the property. They bring the money. You brought the knowledge.
Okay, I see. So you're saying that you go find properties that require investment from outside, and you're creating value for somebody who doesn't have the time to perhaps look at deals but wants the value that real estate has to offer.
Oh, yeah. Everybody kind of understands that, you know, real estate, you can make money. So, but if you coming off the top and saying, hey, I have this deal, it's a 97 unit, there's a 6-9% return on it with an average, I just tell people, I just run numbers in a sense, and I tell people, you know, investors, and say there's 6-9% annualized return. That's what I pay out on these different deals. With annualized returns, to me, that's over a period of time. So I say, you know, get you anywhere between 14-22% annualized return. And that's attractive to a lot of people.
And so you're doing, if I hear you right, then it sounds like you're doing deals, a lot of partnership deals, where you bring somebody in who has the money, you have the expertise, and they match the deal. Is that the case?
I do it both ways. I do my own deals, you know, and some deals, when you get into the bigger deals, it may be, you know, $20 million or so, you bring in other partners, and it's really just looking at the deal and figuring out how to do the deal, really. So every deal to me is something different, and I just try to figure it out. You know, I don't come to the table to be, okay, I need to bring $20 million, I need to bring $200,000. I just want to figure out, how can I help this person who has this asset that don't want it anymore? So that's the going in.
So where do you find these deals? Do they come to you through certain processes? I mean, how do you find deals like that?
You know what? Back in the day, I used to be out there like everybody else. I'm out there knocking on doors. I'm putting out signs for, you know, we'll buy houses and all that kind of stuff. Going online, going to meet people, looking on Craigslist and all this stuff. Now deals find me. So I really get so many calls with so many deals, and hey, check this deal out. You know, I got a good deal here, good deal there. And all it is to me is numbers. So I run the numbers, and I can't do every deal, though. That's the thing. So I know a lot of people out there. So I'll say, hey, I got a husband and wife team. They're working on an 8-unit right now. And so I have other people that want to invest. So I pair people together. I said, why don't y'all invest together? Because y'all want a deal. Y'all want to invest your money and make money on your money, but you don't really understand real estate. Y'all should work together.
Got it.
You know,
so bringing people together.
Well.
So, you know, you're obviously doing deals at a higher level than most people probably in initially getting into real estate would want to do. So what would you be, outside of being a veteran, because there might be some people who are veterans who might be able to take advantage of that, but outside of that, how would you advise somebody just getting started to get into real estate investing?
What I would do, first off, is become a student. So I think the real estate industry is, we have a lack of education, because a lot of people don't really – a lot of us in the industry, and this is across the country, because I travel like crazy, and you got people that all they want to do is wholesale and flip, and you got a little rehab out there. That's all people talk about, wholesale flip. And we have all these, like I said, subject to lease options, wraparound mortgages, all these different are techniques that a lot of people haven't even tapped into, and people literally losing money. They don't even know they have good deals. So what I would do is, I use YouTube a lot. When I first started, I would literally sit on YouTube and hours and hours and hours and hours of training. I would go to these different events across the country, paying for events in California and Texas. So, you know, you got to fly out there. You got to pay $500 to get on a ticket, pay for a hotel. And I meet those people on YouTube, and then I try to go meet them to see, you know, get their documentation and information, and then I apply it. That's the key. A lot of people don't want to apply the information. And we have some very studious people that just keep going to these events and paying. I see people paying $40,000 to learn how to wholesale. That is unacceptable. That is not the right thing to do. It's not that serious. It's not even $20,000 serious. I don't care who's teaching you, and I'll put this together. I'll go up against anybody. I don't care. I know the industry, and I just understand it. I just don't believe somebody should be paying somebody $20,000 to $40,000 unless they come in to live with you and show you how to do real estate. You know, because I see people paying. I got a husband and wife team paid $30,000, and they get emails. Come on now, that's not good. I want people to be credible, give the right people the right information. For $30,000, you need to be bending over backwards to these people, but it's not happening.
Well, I think one of the things that I guess allows for that to happen, because at the top of the show I did share that there's generally two ways in America that you make money. Outside, we're coming up with an idea or patent for something. Usually, you're going to have or start a business or invest in real estate or both of those. And I think because of that, when people have heard of folks making money in real estate, so if someone comes around and says, hey, I can teach you how to do this and you can make $1 million or whatever, then some folks got the money from their 401k or maybe cash it around and say, I'll give them $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 to do that. And then they do it, because obviously you don't need many people to put up that kind of money if you hold a little, you know, workshop or something to really make it worth your while. And I think that the education part is the most important part. And that's what my wife and I did. We got educated, made sure we understood it. But then after about a year, we said, okay, we just got to go do something. Because I'm one of those kind of people that has to get in there, and my wife is too. And we did our first deal. And now it's like, hey, you know, we're just fine trying to find all the money, do as many deals as we can. Because once you've done one, you can replicate it very pretty much easily, you know. We're not doing the high flyer stuff that you're doing. We're doing single family homes, sub 35 market, you know, cash flowing down in a city south of Atlanta that we're investing in. But there's so many ways to skin the cat. And I think that people have an interest in real estate investing, but they're afraid because, you know, if they have a home, they know what that means. And buying it and going through the process is another thing, you know, for them to do. So I think that's a real key, is getting educated. And then at some point, as you said, you have to do something. You've got to decide that I'm going to buy something, and, you know, and don't buy the first thing you look at. I think my wife and I looked at about, oh, geez, I think we looked at 20, 30 properties before we bought one that we wanted. You do some other things now. You're also getting, from what I understand, you're getting involved in a CBD company. Explain a little bit about that. Your equity partner.
Yeah, so for me, everything I do revolves, in a sense, almost revolves around real estate. So how the CBD came about, I was getting all these guys from California to hit me up. They're looking for land over here on the East Coast. And I was in land and warehouses, and I'm getting this land and warehouses for them. And I'm just like, what's going on? And they said, man, CBD is about to, you know, cannabis is about to blow. So for me, I tell people from a real estate perspective, we can get with these same different companies that may be trying to gravitate to the East Coast and find a building for them or a location for them, because it's all real estate. So, but for me, when you look at the numbers from a CBD perspective or cannabis perspective, $22 billion by like 2022 or what have you, there's a lot of money in that industry. So I just partner with some folks, some other folks that are developers now, and we're doing the CBD. We're infusing food with CBD, health food with CBD, and, you know, we getting everything is up and running right now, getting everything set up, and, you know, just going to keep going. But I'm just an equity partner. I don't do anything with the infusing. We got a celebrity chef doing all that kind of stuff. I'm along for the ride, but I understand the wealth that's going to be created from the cannabis market, and we're going to use that to actually, you know, fund some of the projects we have. And if you know anything about hemp can be used to build. So we're going to be using hemp in some of our build outs and development. So that's going to be huge.
Well, you got your hands a lot of stuff, you know, to do. Now, the other thing I see that you're doing, a certification for an administrator for an assisted living facility. Explain that focus.
So right now, if you look at what's going on with the baby boomers, you know, there's 10 million plus, like, leaving jobs like on a daily basis from the baby boomers. They're a big community, and a lot of them were where I was getting in touch with people where they were reaching out to me saying they wanna move from where they were because they didn't want to cut the grass and all that kind of stuff. So they're looking really for a community. So what I do, y'all can do it as well, and I'm sure it's all across the country where you can go talk to the city. I went to talk to the city, and they're looking to build out more 55 and older communities. And some of those communities I've shifted over and looked at the assisted living side of things. And assisted living is just a huge industry that's going to be going on for the next, 17, 18, 19 years. With assisted living, they may need a little bit more of assistance. And, on average, they're paying like $3,000 in rent per room. So if you get a 5-bedroom, you got 5 people in there, 5 times 3, that's 15,000 coming in on a monthly basis, minus expenses, blah, blah, blah. But to me, it's all real estate. It still goes back to real estate because they got to live somewhere. So you can, if you're in the real estate market, you can get good at finding those type of deals to where those people who are looking for assisted living housing, you can get those deals for them. So, I mean, everything for me revolves around real estate.
So as an administrator, you're not talking about managing a facility. You're talking about doing the real estate part then.
So I went through the class. I have to go through another class, and I have to do 100 hours to become an administrator for assisted living. And once I do that, then I'm going to take the national, and I'm just doing this, and I'll tell you why. So I'm going to take the national exam as well because I want to be certified in all the states in a sense to where I can use my title of being a certified administrator for assisted living to where I can put one in Oklahoma. I can have one in Virginia, down in Atlanta, in Texas. And I have the RNs that's going to be in the people that's going to actually run it. But my title and my certification is going to hang on the wall.
Got it. So are you talking about when you say real estate, are you looking at a building or a multi-family building? When you talk about assisted living facility, the ones I know are huge buildings. They have many rooms. They had on-site staff to handle stuff. What are we talking about here?
Okay, when you talk assisted living, there's two types in a sense that have people coming in. There's a thing called family care, and that's for like 6 or below, maybe 5, but 6 or below as far as people in the place. And then when you go above, I think it's 5 or 6, when you go above that, that's when it becomes assisted living. So assisted living can be an apartment, not really an apartment. It can be a house that has, 5, 6 rooms in it. And then you can go to the, you got the bigger building to where you can have 40 people, and it's like it could be a multifamily type of thing. So it could it's differences in it. So.
Well, you got your hands, Charles, in so many pies, I want to grow up and be like you.
Hey, I'm working. Yeah. I'm out here working and making friends. I'm going to tell y'all that right now.
I'm out working there and meeting people. Well, that's the one thing I learned about real estate is that, it's a community of people. And when you start talking to other real estate investors, they're more than willing to share their knowledge about how they do stuff. Because there's a lot of real estate, a lot of opportunities out there, and so I have found that when I meet people who are investing in real estate, they're more than glad to sit down and tell you how they've done what they've done and how to share that information with you. So once you get into that community, it's a great community. It's a lot of fellowship, and I'm not saying I'm surprised, but it is really, really great to see so many African American brothers and sisters doing it as well. And you don't hear about that. You really don't. Until you get in and start talking to people. Yeah, and you see a lot of folks in Africa. They're not going to be in Black Enterprise or anything like that. They're buying, single family homes. Some of them might have 5 properties, 6, 7, 10, 20, and they're doing great things across the board. So, hats off to you and sharing your knowledge. Thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people get a touch? Because you have some books and stuff that's on Amazon. You want to tell us about those?
Yeah, I got a couple. I have about, probably got about 14 books. Some of them out there. Some of them I have, close to my heart. some of them I'm waiting to put out, you know, after this, all this fiasco happens, you know, dropping books or whatever. But I got a couple real estate books, a couple. What I do is I package up stuff that I've done. I package up how to do private money, how to get business credit, how to find that, you know, fixing, you know, real estate side of things, the assisted living, the nonprofit, the government contracting. So I got into all that a little early on. And it's just been, you know, I just keep it up as I go along. And, you know, I keep adding stuff to it maybe. But I partner, though. So for to get in contact with me, you can just look up Charles McCutcheon, really. I'm on all social media, really. I'm more on Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, you can just look up Charles McCutcheon. I even get my email if people want it. You know, it's charlesmcspeaks@yahoo. Charles, the letter M is at Mike, speaks as we're speaking with an S. speaks@yahoo.com. People can reach out that way. I'm human, so you know, I get a lot of emails, and I try to respond as every, you know, everybody, give everybody insight and push people in certain directions, and you know, because I don't try to be the expert in everything. That's not what I do. But I can find it. I can find the answer, because you know, if the answer's out there, I'll find it. But you know, I don't try to be the expert in everything. I know what I'm good at, and I stick with that, and I stick with the experts to do the things that I can't do. So
great, great, great. Well, Charles, thank you so much for being on the show. Your wealth of knowledge. Much success to you in your adventure out there, and please keep us posted as things develop. I'm more than glad to share some of the things that you're doing. And be safe out
well,
there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you much.
All right. You're welcome, sir.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. There are so many ways in real estate, you know, and if you have an idea, if you're a real estate investor, business owner, and would like to be on Your Personal Finance, just hit us up, charlesross@outlook.com. That's charlesross@outlook.com. Also, we're on Facebook, Your Personal Finance. You can find us there. Hit us up there because we want to share the good news about what folks are doing out there. And I think there's a lot of folks that right now are thinking about, well, what can I do during this pandemic? I'm at home. If you're working from home, fine. And after work, you've got time. You can't go out, you know, to certain places. You're sheltering at home. Getting this up together, maybe this is the time to start that business, get your finances in order, start thinking about real estate, you know, because if you come out of this pandemic and you don't have any more knowledge, you don't have a side hustle, okay, that you're doing, you know, then or some more, you know, things that you're capable of, then it's not that you didn't have the time. You just lack the discipline, and this may be the time for you to get it together. So we thank you so much, and we're going to go out with our theme music. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Stay tuned to our show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know, come on, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for being a part of our show, and we'll see you on Wednesday.